Blog Talk Radio.
I do whatever I can, wherever I am, whenever you want me to. Yeah, you have a friend in me to be.
Well, welcome everybody to another great episode of Relationship Marketing 101. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, calling in live from Daytona Beach, Florida, where I am at the Work at Home classroom this week. And my guest today is Joel Block, who's going to be here to talk to us about the Revenue Octopus, as well as my co-host, Jennifer Carter, from EmpoweringWomenInBusiness.com. So welcome, Joel and Jennifer.
Hey, welcome, Gina.
Gina, how are you?
I am great. How are you?
I'm doing excellent, thanks. It's nice to be here with you. Always fun to be with you.
Well, I'm going to do something a little bit different here today, Joel. I've got the folks here at the Work at Home classroom that I want to hear this. So I'm going to try and do it in a way that it doesn't echo too bad, so you don't have to listen to an echoey thing. But I wanted them to hear from you, too, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Great. So, Jennifer, I know you've got a bunch of questions ready for Joel. Why don't I let you do the introductions on Joel? Because, boy, there's just so much that I could say about Joel. Joel and I have been friends for a long time, but I'd love for you to introduce him.
Well, fantastic. I'd love to. Thank you, Gina. I am absolutely really excited about interviewing you today as one of our guests, Joel, because for those of you, most people listening, I think, know who you are, and for those who don't, you've at least heard that you have been called America's Business Growth Architect, and that's pretty big, America's Business Growth Architect. You work with the who's in business, corporate, both on a corporate level as well as individual level, and for those who've worked with you in the past and work with you now, you just inspire tremendous growth in business, both projected as well as currently, as well as those who are looking to bring their business into the 21st century in the here and now. And so I would love for you to please let us know, how in the world did you become to know as America's growth expert, growth architect? What gives you that title, and how is it that you continue that, continue living up to that name today?
Well, first of all, I've been in business for a long time, and, you know, like anybody that's been around for a long time, you get to know people, you know, you have a certain number of accomplishments, and, you know, my, you know, accomplishments started, you know, early. You know, all of us have accomplishments, and all of us need to, you know, really parlay the accomplishments that we have. We need to make good use of those things, and so, you know, I started out as a CPA. Really wasn't much of a soldier, so it didn't work out well for me to stay in that business. But the last account that I worked on was a big real estate syndicator, which means it was a big company that raised money and then bought real estate with it, and they were the quarterback. And I thought, what a cool business that would be. So I left Pricewaterhouse, started a little real estate syndication firm after I had done hundreds of tax returns for this deal and studied these deals, and started to have little successes, had little successes and got them bigger and bigger. And I spent some time in the school of hard knocks. I mean, I learned a lot of things. And I got beat up a few times, but I survived. And then in 1990, fell into a situation where me and another guy, a very, very brilliant guy, invented the concept of delivering stock quotes to investors by fax. And when that happened, we went out. We raised quite a lot of money. It was a venture capital type arrangement. And we went out. You know, my partner was building the systems, and I went out on the road and started selling, and I made a couple of really, really big sales. And again, kept learning, kept acquiring skills, and in 1995 sold that business to a Fortune 500 company, so I had a successful exit. And you know, that gave me some credentials, because now I had accomplished some significant things. I spent time on Wall Street. I was inside of Fortune 500 boardrooms, and you take all those things together, and, you know, I've built a couple of really nice companies, and then people started to hire me. Believe it or not, you know where the name architect came from? It came from a client. And, you know, where else would be a better place for it to come from? So kind of the long roundabout answer to your question is I parlayed all my successes into more and more, and then ultimately a client gave me the title.
Well, and I really, knowing you, Joel, it fits you so well. That is what you do. There is no accident about it. Just like an architect, you very strategically plan businesses for people, basically, or with people is more like it. Joel and I have known each other for a couple of years now. He spoke at my seminar in Sandusky a year and a half or so ago, and he is just so brilliant. I know when I have questions about the money side of business, he is the first person that I want to go to.
Well, listen, and you're always welcome to call me, and you know, if it's whether it's a discussion about money, whether it's a discussion about you know, strategically planning revenue streams so you can drive revenue into your business, you know, and
well, to me, that's money.
It's money, and I appreciate that you've reciprocated by coaching me on all the specialty services that you provide, which has been really great for me.
So, Jennifer, what are we going to have Joel share with everybody today?
Well, actually, I have a question based on something you said, Joel. So it's fantastic, first off, that a client gave you that name. So that means it's well-earned and not self-appointed, and that means it runs deeper than anybody can imagine. I was very interested in what you said. You gave us just a couple examples of what led you to your success, but both of them were based on the premise that you saw some models that were working really well, and you decided to go out to reproduce them. And I also noticed that in each of those occasions, you had some big accounts that worked well. And in other words, you went after the big fish, and it seems that you're very good at doing that not only for yourself, but if you look at your track record of the other companies you've worked with and individual clients on, you know, any one of your websites and testimonials, you're very good at keying in strategically on what the big fish seem to be for the companies and clients that you work with. So I'm curious, how is it that you help people key in on what is the best that they do and go after the big fish in their business or whatever it is or the corporation that you're working with?
You know, the first thing you have to do is, you know, ironically, you know, I'm engaged by entrepreneurs to help them. I mean, you know, once I sold my company, I bought another publishing company. I sold that. And then I started this advisory practice because I'm all about helping entrepreneurs be the best that they can be. And, you know, my best that they can be is maybe different than some other people's. I want people to really go to the wall if they can, you know, and they have to really want to. And, you know, first, let me just say, I'll get to your question in a second, but most people say they want things that they really don't want. They say it, it's easy to say it, but I push them to the place where it, you know, where they have to go in order to get it. And if they really want to be there, I will make them go there. I mean, I will get them there because they have to be hungry. But there are a lot of people where it's just lip service and it looks nice to say it. If people are really serious, then they're going to take seriously the things that I say. They're going to do the things that I tell them to do. They're going to go the extra mile. And by the way, I go the extra mile for the people who are going the extra mile with me. So how do you get people to, you know, go into the big boardrooms and get them to the place? You know, first of all, you have to think big. You have to think, you know, how is this project or this product or this activity going to change anybody's lives, let alone lots of people's lives? If you can't change somebody's life for the better and help them, that's whether you're giving them vitamin pills, pain pills, you know, or giving them cars. If you can't make their life better in some way, then what do they need you for? And, you know, when you can make a lot of people's lives better, then you can go into a company, a big company, and you can explain to them what you have. And, you know, I'm an elephant hunter. I mean, I've always been an elephant hunter. I'm a home run hitter. I've never really been a great base hitter. But different people have different skills. And part of what, you know, you have to do is you have to get people to do what their skill set is. So if somebody's a base hitter, and by the way, every business needs a base hitter. That's somebody who is making small sales all the time, every day. Because my sales could take a year, and what if it doesn't come through? Now, when I make one, I can keep 30 people busy for 3 years. But if I don't make one of those giant sales, because sometimes they don't happen, you know, the base hitters are the ones that keep the business going. So you have to really get both sets going. I don't want to over-glamorize the big hit.
Okay, but and that kind of refers back to saying you said some people will give lip service to, you know, I want my company to go this far, I want to make X number of millions of dollars, but may or may not know what they're really committing to and may or may not be willing to back that up with action. And some of that sometimes means, yes, go after the elephant, but have a plan, have that plan to be making the base hits, as you say, and the sales along the way to sustain until you catch the big elephant.
Well, when I was saying that you know, people pay lip service, you know, everybody wants to be an extremely rich person with all sorts of you know, independence to do whatever they want, but not everybody is willing to work as hard as it takes. And I think that, you know, one of the things that this terrible economy is going to do for our country, which is going to be really good in the long run, is it is forcing people to go back to basics and back to work. And that's not a bad thing. I'm working harder, and every person I know is working harder, because to make the same things happen that were happening easily before, we have to work harder. But you know what? Hard work is going to be rewarded. And I think if people agree to work hard, then they're going to get enormous, enormous rewards. And
here's what I hear you saying, Joel. What I hear you saying is, in any business, you don't just want one revenue stream. You want those base hitters, and you want some of the guys that can bring in the big elephants, too. You want to have a number of different ways of making money. Is that what you're really saying?
That's a great transition, because you need to have lots of different things going on. Because when I said that sometimes, you know, I go out for the big elephant, I don't always score. Sometimes things don't go my way. And you got to have the guys doing small sales, because the small ones are going to keep the business going. That's an example of having two different things happening. Businesses have seasonality. Businesses have ups and downs. And so you have to have ways of filling the downs and maximizing the ups. And the revenue octopus is exactly the concept that does that. And, you know, keeping a business on track is not an easy task. But if you build revenue streams, it makes your life so much easier. If you're very clear about exactly what you want to do and exactly what's supposed to happen, everything about your business will be so much easier. You'll notice other people struggling, you'll be having an easy time.
And in building revenue streams, how do you go about doing that? If you were just getting a business off the ground like most of my listeners are, what do they want to look at first? Trying to do it all seems kind of overwhelming.
Well, first of all, let me explain what the concept is. Because
okay.
I counsel a lot of early stage companies that have zero revenue, no dollars have ever come in before. And these are the ones that are really challenging. And Gina, these are a lot of the kind of people that I know that you specialize in working with. So let me start from the beginning and give a couple of examples, because the examples are really going to help. Take a company. Well, let's just first explain what a revenue octopus is. The concept of a revenue octopus, which is something I developed in business, and it's helped me to be successful over and over again, says that you need to have multiple streams of revenue coming out of your core business. So here's what that means. That means that you find a core business, whatever that main business is that you're doing, and you find lots of different ways to make money from it. Now, I'm not saying that you go in the stock market over here and buy real estate over there and invest in gold coins over there. That's not what it is. I want you to figure out what your main business is, what you are passionate about, what you are great at. Do that one thing, and then find more ways to monetize those activities. And that's what we're going to spend time talking about right now. How do you strategize that situation? How do you make it happen? Because when you figure out how to do that, that's exactly when you're going to start being successful.
And so we're talking about taking these, the core brilliance of product or core focus of the company, and finding these numerous ways to monetize it. So you're not putting all of your eggs in one sales basket per se, but they're all the same kind of eggs, more or less. It's still focused.
That is such a great analogy. They're not all the same kind of eggs, but you don't want to put all of them in one basket. You don't want to be dependent on one thing. So that's a perfect analogy. Let me try to, you know, give a couple of examples of situations that have used a revenue octopus. So let's take, for example, when my kids were little, we used to take them to the shoe store in the mall. And the shoe store is a great example because the core business of a shoe store is selling shoes. Very simple. Now, the owner of the shoe store was a smart guy. And so he figures, you know, as long as people are buying shoes, after a while, the shoes are going to, you know, wear out. They get a hole in them. Something's going to happen. They're not ready for a new shoe, so they need shoe repair. Where's the likely place you go for shoe repair? You go right back to the shoe place. So the guy's got a little shoe repair built in. And then he notices, well, you know, we probably ought to be selling these people even more things. How about we could sell them accessories like socks and shoelaces and things like this? So the one side of a revenue octopus is how can I do more business with the same customers? How can I go deep with these customers? And you have to ask questions. First of all, the first question, how can I go deep with my customers? How can I sell the same people more things? And if you just get clear on that one thing, the first half of your revenue octopus is going to come into vision very, very quick. It'll be very easy for you to see this. So the shoe store guy says, ask the question, how can I sell my customers more things? Well, number one, he develops this mechanism for selling them shoe repair services in addition to the basic core service of selling shoes. And he says, I'm going to sell accessories. And then he came up with a clever one, not related to shoes at all. He has a giant gumball machine because his customers are mostly children. And these giant bubble gums and this huge thing. And I said to the guy one day, I said, how do you do with this gumball machine? You make much money from it? He said, you wouldn't believe it. It pays for our family vacation every year. So we get thousands of quarters, and then we go on vacation. So the guy was a sharp guy. Now, he only had half the revenue octopus because all he did was go deep with his customers. There's another half, and we'll get to that in a minute.
Uh-huh, but you're going to keep us waiting with bated breath to the other half of that. So we need to go deep with our customers, find – everybody's heard that it's much easier to make a sale to somebody you've already sold to than trying to sell to somebody brand new every time. So you're talking about that, all right? They're already your customer. Make them happy. Find out what they need and fill those needs on several levels.
Okay, but from a strategic planning point of view, from being strategic, from thinking in advance – I want you to be structured, and the structure is what other things can I do with my customers, and you draw a picture of that, and you say, well, we could do accessories, we could do shoe repair. These are more things. Let me give you an example of another company that has done a great revenue octopus, and I haven't ever talked to this company. It's a famous company, but I just imagine what it must have been like being this company. Think about Starbucks for a minute. 30 or 40 years ago, a couple people in Seattle are sitting in a little place, and they've got some beans, and they've roasted their beans, and they grind them up, and they make a cup of coffee, and they say, wow, this is a pretty good cup of coffee. A friend comes over and says, wow, this is a really good cup of coffee. A third friend comes over, wow, this is really good coffee. Why don't you start a little coffee shop, or we can all do it together, and you know, people will probably want to come and have some coffee and hang out with us. So they start this coffee shop. I could just imagine how this was. They start the coffee shop, and people start coming in, and they say to themselves, wow, we're really starting to get a following. This is really exciting. So more people keep coming in. And then they ask themselves, well, how can we sell more stuff to these people? How can we make more money? Because it's easier to sell to an existing customer than find a new one. How can we make more money? Well, the thing that they come up with is, why don't we start selling them accessories? Just like the shoe store guy. Well, maybe we can sell them coffee mugs or coffee makers or coffee whatever, okay? And then they go a little further and they say, what else could we sell these people? Well, if they like our beans so much, you know, when we brew it, maybe we could package them into bags and they could take them home and make the coffee themselves, because, you know, we're selling them coffee makers and things, so we could also sell them some beans. So now they're selling beans. And then a little while later, many years later, fast forward, they probably get approached by, you know, one of these wireless companies. And the wireless company says, hey, do you think that we could, set up wireless service because, you know, your people, you have a lot of people sitting there with computers, and we'll charge them a little fee for being there, and then we'll give you a cut of the fee. So that's a whole other arrangement that they make. Now they got a revenue stream from a wireless company. And then some years later, a credit card company comes in and says, could we put a little brochure on your counter, and if they buy a credit card, if they take a credit card from us, we'll give you a cut of all the money they do. So they've got all these different revenue streams that are derivative of their existing customers. The existing customers are coming in the store. So my point to you guys is think in advance. Don't be spontaneous about it. Think about it in advance. Now, you don't have to roll all of them out at the same time, but think in advance about what are possible ways you could go deep with your customers, and then start doing that one at a time once your main business is up and running. And you'll see that you'll make a lot more money than you're able to make just by yourself.
And what's interesting is, I'm glad that you brought up Starbucks, because I'm a huge fan of Starbucks, and we're talking about, I was talking about this with a friend the other day, why in the world am I willing to pay, you know, $3.95 for, you know, a cup of coffee, essentially, when at home I can pay 20 cents, or maybe I can go down to the local diner and pay maybe $1.50, but no, I'm willing to go to Starbucks and pay $3.95. Why is it? Starbucks, in thinking deeper about the experience, thought, well, what is it about coffee? Great, we make a great cup of coffee, but what do coffee drinkers really want? Well, they like the feeling of the coffee. They like the conversation. They like the – and they thought about this, and so they created the Starbucks experience, which then allowed them to charge, you know, 2 and 3 times as much as what people pay for coffee everywhere else, thereby creating this mob following for Starbucks coffee.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of, it depends on how you use Starbucks. If you just run in and take it to go, you got to wonder, you know, what it's worth. But if you hang out at Starbucks, like you go there and you take a table, I kind of just think of the $3.95 as paying rent for the chair that you're sitting in. And, you know, to me, if I, you know, go and read a book or talk to somebody, I'm just renting the chair for an hour, and that's how I think about it. Maybe it's all justification. And that's all what all of us do all the time. But Starbucks has created great revenue streams because they've created a certain environment for their customers and a certain relationship with their customers. And that relationship with their customers is an asset. It's absolutely an asset. Now, one thing Starbucks probably doesn't have, which they could do better at, which is Gina's expertise, is I'll bet you they don't have a very good database of their customers. Gina, do you have any sense about that?
Yeah, you're very right on that one. I bet they don't. And that is something that they could definitely do a lot better at. What they could do is, even on the top of their receipts, they could go in and add a little message that says something like, for preferred customer discounts, go and register at blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So that they could go and send emails to them. And this is a huge revenue stream that they are missing out on right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably 10 more ways they can make money from people. In general, retailers do not have much relationship with their customers. Starbucks has a really good relationship, kind of in a non-name-knowing way. But Starbucks has a particular relationship with their customers. Restaurants have a certain relationship. Even the shoe store, I mean, we knew the proprietor. In your neighborhood, you tend to know your customers. But most big stores have millions and millions of customers, and they don't have no idea who they are. They don't really, unless the person gets a credit card, and like Costco, where Costco knows every piece of gum that you've ever bought from them for the last 20 years, and they know every time you've made a return, and they know every time, you know, which person in the family used their card. I mean, they know everything about you. That's a special kind of database-driven environment. But most retailers really don't know much about you, and really are leaving a lot of meat on the bone, so to speak. So, but that's, again, another piece of the revenue octopus that they probably left off of their strategic plan, because their strategic plan might have been written 20 years ago before databases were really popular.
What I hear you saying, Joel, is a concept that I talk about often as being increasing the lifetime value of a customer. What you're really saying is, as a business, you don't need to necessarily go out and make new customers. That's always going to be your highest cost in a business anyway, creating new customers. What you're talking about with the revenue octopus is ways of increasing the lifetime value of one single customer, but doing it in kind of a strategic way.
That's half of it. One half is exactly what you just said. Lifetime value of a customer is a concept that is part of the customer relationship management philosophy, which is you have to treat your customers with great respect, because over a long time, these people are going to be very valuable to you, and you need to, you know, create that great relationship. So you're right. That's half of it, is going deep with an existing customer, because, you know, that's important. However, you also have to worry about attrition and getting new customers. I'll give you an example. Just this last week, I called the summer camp where my youngest daughter is going to go this summer. And I asked the camp, I said, how's enrollment? You know, because the economy's tough and everything. He said, oh, no, it's pretty good, pretty good. I said, well, you know, like, are you noticing any pattern in how sign-ups are coming? She goes, well, yeah, we're not getting very many new kids. We mostly are getting old kids because, you know, the families of these kids recognize the value of going to camp, and they recognize how much fun the kids had, and so they find the money to go. And I said, well, you know, that's great that you're full, but imagine a year or two from now, you know, the kids that have been going for a while, now they stop going because they get too old or whatever reason happens. I said, you're not bringing up a new crop of people. So even though you want to maximize the lifetime value of a customer, on one side of the revenue octopus, you're really concerned about going deep with somebody. On the other side of the revenue octopus, you have to be very concerned about creating new relationships. And there are some really nice ways of creating new relationships. And Gina, you were a JV broker for a long time, so all this material is going to be really familiar to you, because, you know, the second half is about, you know, working with other people to create new relationships, because you want to ask the question, who has customers like mine that I could benefit from? And vice versa, how could they benefit from you? So go back to Starbucks. On the second half, who has customers like us? I can just imagine that sometime along the way, somebody from Costco calls up Starbucks and says, look, do you sell beans in 5-pound bags? And they say, no, we sell them in 8-ounce bags or whatever size they sell them. And they go, that's great. Can we be the representatives of your 5-pound bags? So all of a sudden now, Costco is selling giant bags of beans to people who don't go to Starbucks ordinarily, but want to buy high-quality coffee. So they've created a whole new set of customers that don't frequent the store. And then imagine this, and then somebody comes to Costco and says, look, can we make ice cream out of your recipes? And then I know that they have that iced frappuccino, they sell it in the store. So now supermarkets are selling all these Starbucks products. So Starbucks is selling products through different channels or different markets or different outlets to get new customers, because there are more people that drink coffee than walk into a Starbucks store. And so the second half of the revenue octopus is all about how do you get new customers that you wouldn't otherwise have access to.
So if you had an information business, how can you do this? What I'm thinking is, okay, like I've got the 30-day IM challenge, for example. So how can I use this in the same way? Well, an example might be, tell me if this is right, Joel. Maybe I could find other people who aren't necessarily in the internet marketing niche. Let's say I've got somebody who's in the self-improvement niche, and I could allow them to co-brand my challenge to them so that they're using it to reach their audience, but at the same time, it's driving people back to me. Would that work?
Absolutely. Yes. That's an example of the second half, which is getting new customers through other people's activities. So, you know, that's a great, great example. And
this is something that most internet businesses don't ever think about doing.
Yeah, we'll talk about service businesses and internet businesses in a minute. But I use Starbucks because it's so easy to understand. It's so obvious, and they've done such a great job. Now, some big companies have done a much better job than others of monetizing a revenue octopus. And even Starbucks, we just punched a giant hole through, you know, their marketing plan. And they need to be developing that. And Gina, you and I really should call Starbucks and tell them that we can make it happen for them, because this is a big place where they're simply not taken advantage of.
It's funny you say that, because I just finished a six-week program with a group of my students and another coach by the name of David Preston. And David's business, he calls it the offline cash cow program. David's actually going to be my guest on next week's show. And what he does is he goes to offline businesses to help them create an online presence. And the last 2 weeks, I've been trying to figure out how to reach Starbucks to help them do this exact thing. So, Joel, you're on.
Well, you know what, Gina? You know that I have one of the biggest LinkedIn databases in the world.
I do.
And as a result of that, I guarantee I can find anybody anywhere in any company at any time. And
awesome. Let's do it.
When we're done here, we'll get on the phone with Starbucks, and we'll find somebody who's really great there, I promise.
That's great, because I've got 5 different ideas for them already. So.
Well, they'll be hearing about them before you know it.
Good.
Good.
So let's continue with the other parts to the revenue octopus.
All right. So the critical part of any kind of strategy or planning is asking questions. When you ask great questions, you get great answers. When you ask bad questions, you get bad answers. If you don't ask any questions, you don't get any answers. And so really you have to get in the habit of asking questions. And, you know, one of the first questions that you ask when you're starting any business is, how can I monetize this? Let's say, for example, every time there's an event in the world, get in the habit of asking the question, how can I monetize or dollarize this event? So let's say, for example, you know, something happens. Gina, pick anything that's happened. Jennifer, pick anything that's happened in the world in the last week. It doesn't matter what it is. You pick event.
Has anything happened? Obama's decided that GM and Chrysler are not going to get this big bailout unless they switch things up.
All right, perfect. So GM and Chrysler are going down the drain. How can I monetize that information? Well, let me tell you that, you know, there's a couple things. Yesterday, there were stock market experts who predicted before the market opened, because they asked that question, they knew that GM was going to go down. So they bought and bet that the stock would go down, and they probably made a lot of money yesterday. So if you ask the question, how could we monetize this event? GM and Chrysler are doing badly. How could we monetize this information? Well, I don't have every answer, but I'll tell you what. If a few of us sat around a table and asked the question, how can we monetize this information? I'll bet you that we could come up with some very, very cool things. And that's where it starts with. That's how businesses are born. You know, when John McCain said that Sarah Palin was going to be the VP, you know, a prospective candidate, that day some company said, how can we monetize this information? They came out with a Sarah Palin bobblehead doll 2 days later. So, you know, these guys, I mean, their people are always figuring out ways to make money on things. There was a terrible train crash in Los Angeles 6 months ago. 2 days later, there were attorneys running advertisements on TV to have lawsuits about this train crash, which, by the way, the state bar made them take off the TV. But people are always asking the question. The smart people are asking the questions, and the smart people are getting the answers. And that's the habit you have to get into. That becomes the core business. And then from there, you start talking about, you know, once we start getting customers, how can we go deep with them? And the second half is how can we get more customers by working with other people? And that is really what it is. It's so simple. Now, simple doesn't mean that everybody's going to be able to, you know, listen to this program and go out and do it. And for that reason, I've created, you know, extensive materials that walk you step by step through this process. And, you know, that's something that we can talk about later. But I want people to succeed. You can't have a great business if you don't have a great revenue octopus. It is impossible. You cannot do it. Think of any great business, and if they have a single revenue stream, I would be just shocked. I mean, does Microsoft have just one way of making money? Does Google have only one way of making money? Does Yahoo have only one way? Even the newspapers that are doing badly have many different ways that they make money. They don't make enough anymore, but they have lots of different ways that they try to make money. And, you know, there's this is a very critical component for anybody who wants to make money. You have to figure out lots of different ways. You know, here's what it is. You have to really squeeze all the juice out of your lemon. That's all there is to it. You have to completely squeeze the juice by monetizing it in every single way. Now, you know, one thing about me is I'm not really big on you know, going into a business and saying, okay, cut costs, and let's try to squeeze the juice out of what we have here. I'm all about revenue. because at the end of the day, I remember I came from the accounting business and I didn't like it. But at the end of the day, an accountant type person can only reduce costs so much. You know, you can't cut the arms and legs off the person and throw them in the water and say swim. At some point in time, you know, you have to increase revenue. Now, most people don't know how to increase revenue. You know, accountants will say, you know, cut costs and sell more. They have no idea how to sell more, but that's what they'll say. And what I tell people is, I know exactly how to sell more, and I'm exactly going to help you to create more revenue. Now, we'll talk about how to apply these to different kinds of businesses or industries in a few minutes, but my whole thing is about how do you create more revenue. That's all I care about. Because if there's lots of revenue, the expenses just don't matter. Somebody else can trim the expenses and keep things in order. My goal is let's make a strategy about how to have revenue, and let's go out and get it in a really, really big way.
Hmm. You know, Joel, Napoleon Hill tells this great story of how somebody brought in, how a life insurance salesman brought in all these different revenue streams in a super creative way. The life insurance salesman goes to a grocery store and says, hey, I can have your customers buying more stuff if they agree to pay $50 a month in groceries. They get a life insurance policy. And then he went to a doctor and said, for all my new customers, you get a life insurance policy. And then to an automobile company, and where we build safe cars, we're so confident of it, we're going to give you a life insurance policy for it. And just these creative things that I never would have thought of, I think, as a life insurance salesman. But in reading that, it really had me thinking, gosh, we can be super creative about this. And I hear that you are very creative about helping your clients do just that, figure out these previously unthought of new ways of bringing in revenue streams. What are some other examples of how you've seen businesses do just that, creatively go out and find more streams of revenue?
Well, you know, first let me just comment on your Napoleon Hill example. The thing that's so striking about Napoleon Hill is that man wrote that book like 80 years ago. I mean, we all kind of think of the world as, you know, like it started like in the last 6 months. But, you know, people have been doing interesting things for a long time. And so people have been creative for a long time. I think that we're getting better at writing things down and understanding things and being more precise and scientific. But, you know, they had a good sense about things back then, and that's just an example, Jennifer, about how it works. Because somebody was thinking, how can I sell more product to more people, to my people, and how can I get other people to help me get more people? Right. And those are the two sides of the revenue octopus. And so you go into these stores, you know, it's perfect. I think it's just a wonderful example. Other examples of other kinds of companies, you know, it would really be easier to answer if we had a caller or we had a listener suggest, hey, listen, here's a company. You know, what are possible revenue streams, or, you know, what every single business, and there isn't one that you can think of, that whether they've intentionally brainstormed a revenue octopus or not, they all have one, and, you know, they may not quite understand it. If they don't quite understand it, then it probably isn't functioning optimally, or they may have an out-of-date revenue octopus, like maybe Starbucks needs a little bit of refreshing. And here's another thing. Is once you start identifying revenue streams, then you might need experts. Like, I'm a strategist at the top level, and I define all the revenue streams. But once you define them, let's say you make one of your revenue streams about, you know, going deep in a social networking environment, you're probably going to need to engage an expert like Gina or somebody else to help you to maximize that tentacle of the octopus. So I help you create the picture of all the different revenue streams and where you need to go. And if you don't have this, you're probably not going to go where you want to go, or you're not going to get very far anyway. But then you got to, you know, then you get people like Gina that can really say, well, now I totally see what you want to do. Now we can really zero in, and you don't waste the time and resources of these very valuable people because they're focused completely on what you want to accomplish, and they really are then able to supercharge your efforts. So it's just critical that you learn how to do this, you know, follow a step-by-step methodology to help you get where you want to go. And if you need a little bit of help, then you can call in and ask for it. But you know exactly what questions to ask, which minimizes the amount of time that it's going to take you to get that information. So it's just really important, and I really want people to be thinking about the value of doing this.
Well, you know, you could actually help me with one of the people that's here at this work-at-home classroom workshop this week. His business is a new, brand new business, and the market is helping people who are looking to get free medicine. And one of our big questions this week is, how do we build out the revenue streams for this? What does that look like? Because this is an audience that is really challenging. Typically, people who are looking for free medicines are people who are making less than $21,000 a year. They have to, just in order to qualify to get free medicine. So what do you do when you're in a market that's like that, where the people don't have a lot of money, they do have this one particular need to build out these revenue streams?
Well, first of all, just because the core audience doesn't have any money doesn't mean that the business is going to not get any money, because they're obviously not getting their money from the audience that they're attracting. That's what's called a bilateral business. It has two sides. It has a seller and it has a buyer. See, you know, or in a newspaper, it's an audience, you have readers, and you have advertisers. So, you know, clearly this is a bilateral kind of environment. And you're going to have people that you're advertising to. They're going to click, and they're going to – or do they have computers, these people, in your estimation?
Absolutely.
Okay. So if they have computer access, let's say you use an AdWords campaign to pinpoint exactly where these people are, and you say, click here, you make a database of these people, and you get a – so that's number one, collect your database. Number two, you're going to get the people to then identify themselves as somebody. So the company then gets this information and sends it to the pharmacy or however the insurance arrangements work for the reimbursements. But now you're starting to create an audience. So – once you've created an audience, you have a very typical internet-oriented revenue set of revenue streams. So number one, you have advertising possibilities as your list gets bigger. Number two, you have database possibilities as your list gets bigger. Number three, companies are going to want to sell products to these people. So not only do you have an advertising component, but you might have a transactional or a commission component. And this is very important, and this actually opens up a whole other discussion that I think would be relevant for us to have on this topic. But you know, you can say to somebody, I want a percentage of what you sell. So not, you know, I want you to pay, either $100 for the ad, or you can say, I don't want any money for the ad, but I want a percentage of what you earn. So that's another way of doing it, and there's lots of different ways to make that happen. And you know, the long and the short is that I think that this is one of these deals where a person has to, be creative about what are all the different companies that would like to get in front of this audience. And you, as you lay that out, it sort of becomes clear about exactly what needs to happen.
And I think joint ventures can really play into it in a big way, because there are so many of those types of opportunities that you were just referring to. I know, personally, I would much rather take a commission based on an upfront cost any day.
Well, most people, you know, many people would. That's become very, very common. But, you know, one of the things that's important is that there are other people in a joint venture kind of environment. Pay-per-click is one way of getting these people, but there are already lists of people that have probably the exact people that you want. So when I was saying that, you know, Costco and Starbucks work together, there's no reason that two groups of internet marketers can't work together. You know, one person has a list, another person has a need that list fulfills, bang, now they're working together, somebody gets commission, the other person now starts to do business with people who are on their list, and everybody's happy. And that's a way of furthering your revenue octopus. And it's extremely important that you do this, because it's going to save you a lot of time. Imagine if you had to go out and find every person by yourself. Leverage the work that other people have already done. Give them a little money for the work that they've already done. That's your way of saying thank you. In business, we say thank you with money. That's how we do it.
It's funny you use that word leverage, because that's kind of my word of the month with my students. The whole concept of leverage for someone who's just getting started in business is one that's actually quite challenging to understand. And I never realized that fully until very recently, looking at the glazed look at my students' eyes. But leverage, why don't you explain it from your terms? What do you mean when you say leverage, Joel? Because to me, business is all about leverage.
It is. Business is all about leverage. Leverage means getting a little more action than you deserve. So, you know, like, I'm not a physicist and I'm not even a mathematical kind of person, but I know that, you know, when you push on a piece of wood or a screwdriver or something, you know, if it's longer, it's going to be easier. If it's shorter, it's going to be harder. And so there's mathematical leverage. Well, in business, you know, let's say when you buy real estate, real estate's the best example of leverage, because, you know, you go buy a house. You know, nobody has $1 million to buy a house, but, you know, in California, a lot of people have $200,000, and they go to the bank and they borrow the other $800,000. At least in the old days, maybe right this minute it's a little different, but, you know, that's leverage, where you can control $1 million with only $200,000. Now, in business, let's think about the money business first. Sometimes leverage gets out of hand, and our economy is out of whack because leverage has gotten out of hand. People were controlling too much with too little. In the commodities markets, for example, you can put up a few dollars and control thousands of dollars worth of things. So the leverage is very, very great. If you're busy on the phone, calling people one at a time, that's not a lot of leverage. Let's think about an accounting firm. An accounting firm of one person, if it's a one-person accounting firm, and I want a lot of people who are listening to think of themselves, am I going to be a one-person operation, or do you want to do strategic planning that gets you to think, hey, I want to be a little bigger because I want some leverage? Leverage means help. Leverage and the word help are probably the best combination. So if you want some help making money, and you don't want to have to do all of it yourself, then you have to create a team of people that are going to help you. And what you're going to do, let's say an accounting firm, one person bills a certain amount of hours, they work a certain amount of hours, at the end of the day they have some number of dollars left. That's about the lowest level of work that you can do. In fact, I have a whole strategy about this. I call it box 1, 2, 3, and 4. And so there's different kinds of revenue. Box 1 is service revenue, where it's, you know, it's fee for services. You show up and you get paid. And think about jobs. Jobs are pretty much all fee for services. You show up, you're there for 40 hours, they give you some money, and you leave, and next week you come back. And without being extremely rude, it's kind of childish, because companies have trained people to be like children, that every week they show up with their hand out, they get a little money, they go back. They do whatever they do, they come back, and they're very dependent on these companies. And a lot of people don't like it. Entrepreneurs simply don't like that model. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I don't want to be overly critical or rude, and maybe that was not a nice thing to say, but that's the only way that I can think of it as an entrepreneur myself. An entrepreneur, on the other hand, will say, gee, I don't want to be dependent on anyone to take care of my family. I'm going to take care of my family, and I'm going to do that by, you know, doing all the things that I have to do. So I don't want to be in a box one situation. In fact, I would go as far as saying that a box one is not even a business. Box one is like a job where you have a job working for yourself, but it's still a job because there's no leverage. Box two is what I call transactional revenue. Transactional means you get paid for time, but you get paid for closing a deal. So a salesperson, for example. But the thing about sales is there's still a certain amount of time connected to it, so it's not perfect. Better than box one, but it's not perfect. You guys follow me?
We're following.
All right, good. So that's box one and two. Box three is really what's great. You know, your goal is to move all the way to box three and four. And if you think of a square and you draw, you know, like a line down the middle and a line across, you've got these four boxes in a square. Box one and two are on the bottom, and you want to elevate to box three and four. Box three and four is really where you have leverage. And so, you know, many internet marketing businesses find themselves in box three or maybe even box four. Box three means, let's say, a subscription business. Well, if you write for a magazine and you get paid, you know, let's say you own a magazine and you write a column, and you know it costs you $1,000 to produce. If you had one customer, then it would have cost you $1,000. But let's say you get 1,000 customers, you know, it costs you, you know, it didn't cost you any more to service 1,000 customers as one. Think about it like this. Think about General Motors. That's a good example. We talked about it before. If they create a new car, how much did it cost to produce just one car? If they only made one car, it would cost more than $1 billion. But how much does the second car cost? The second car costs about $10,000. So that's the power of leverage. That's really understanding that the second dollar is easier to get than the first. And what's important to remember about that is leverage. So box three is some kind of subscription revenue, royalty revenue. It's some kind of revenue that's not dependent on time. It's highly leveraged. And box four is where the money's just working all by itself. You buy an apartment building, you invest in something, maybe even a database. A database is an asset that you can sell over and over and over and over again. It doesn't wear out. Maybe it burns out after a while, but you can make a lot of money from it, and you don't have to do anything. And that's what box four is. And all this stuff is covered in the material that I've produced, because I've written extensively about this in very easy to understand language. I actually had a really fun and friendly professor, Professor Mark, you know, write all this stuff and put it all together so that it would be user friendly. Because I want entrepreneurs to be able to benefit from this. This is the single biggest, most important thing that you can do for your business that will really help you. And it will help you understand leverage. In the little accounting firm, the accountant, if it's one person, doesn't make any money. But if he's got five people and he, you know, four people are working all day long and he's making a little bit of money on each one, that accountant can go on vacation and know that money will continue to come in whether he's there or not. And if you don't have that situation, then you have nothing more than a job. A business is a machine that makes money. And you have to create a mechanism for generating that money whether you're around or not. And that's, Gina, I know a lot of the internet marketing activity that you do, a lot of the internet marketing businesses that people are working on creating, they're machines that generate money whether you're there or not. And that's the
right.
beauty of them. And they operate
is-
boxed.
With the stuff that I teach, you know, how to build lists, how to do traffic, that kind of thing. If you don't have this piece set up right, I don't care how much traffic you drive. I don't care how big your list is. It's not going to make you any money.
Well, if you don't have your plan organized in advance, the business is going to grow in the direction it's going to grow. You have no control. Imagine driving a car with no steering wheel. If you didn't have a steering wheel, the car would drive off the road eventually, and that's what happens with businesses. And that's why boards of directors get fired. General Motors, their board is being fired right now because they didn't steer the company in the right direction. They don't have any plan. They're gasping for breath, and they're just trying to survive. And 10 years ago, they should have created a plan that would have been more directional because, you know, a big company like that takes time. But they didn't have a plan. So don't be somebody that doesn't have a plan. Listen, if you're just getting going in your business, create a fantastic plan. Right this minute, a fantastic plan. Because if you create a fantastic plan, I guarantee with certainty you will have a great level of success. And you create your revenue streams, and then you call Gina and you say, hey, Gina, listen, I've got these four revenue streams. Can you help me to work on one of them? Now, let's say that, you know, one of your revenue streams, let's go back to the shoe store and talk about how Gina fits in here. So the guy sells shoes, that's the core business, and he doesn't have really a mechanism for working with outside companies. So he's just working on the one side where he wants to go deep with his existing customers. So he sells accessories, he sells shoe repair, and he sells gumballs. He's got these three things. But what he doesn't have is really a database of his customers. So imagine if he added a fifth revenue stream on that side, on the side of going deep with his customers, and now he had a database. And he had some mechanism of working with them. First of all, when he goes to sell his business, now he's not only selling the shoe store, he's selling the database of possible customers, you know, in this neighborhood. He can sell them more things. And then, by the way, you know, because his customers are children mostly, and they have and parents of children, then companies that deal with parents of children and children can call him and say, "Can we use your database?" Like, what if a nursery school called him and said, "Hey, listen, I know you sell shoes to little kids. You think we could, you know, send an email out to the people who you know, are ready for preschool, or you know, any other kind, like any other kind of company that services children and parents of children, could contact him and say, hey, do you think we'd cooperate together? And I guarantee they could. So that's the power. You got to have your databases. You got to have your plan. And I guarantee the guy didn't sit and think about it in advance, or he'd be doing it right now.
I've got a really good example of that last thing we were talking about with the shoe store and the preschool. There was a pharmacy that had a database of all of their pharmacy customers. And every year they would send Christmas cards out to every customer in that database. Across the street from the pharmacy was a jewelry store. So the jewelry store went to the pharmacy and said, you know, I get that Christmas card from you every year. Would you mind if we used your database when it comes time for Christmas? And here's what we want you to do. We'll give you a letter, and all you've got to do is go and send this letter out with your Christmas cards. And in this letter, there's going to be a coupon, and it's going to tell your people that if they bring this coupon into the store and they present the coupon specifically to the owner of the jewelry store, that they will get 25% off of any piece of jewelry. And what we'll do is for every one of those coupons we get, we'll pay you $100. Well, that little promotion didn't cost anybody any extra except for the printing of that letter, right? Because the Christmas cards were going out anyway. But it brought in more than $100,000 for the jewelry store. And the pharmacy owner who owned the database ended up making 20%, almost, because that's what the $100 coupon ended up being, and ended up making about $20,000 on it for himself. Those are really good ways of adding leverage.
Isn't that amazing? You know, and a lot of the stuff people are saying, well, yeah, I would do that. But, you know, they don't think of it in advance. And what I'm encouraging people to do is think of it in advance, because the worst thing that an entrepreneur can do is leave money on the table. You know, you don't get that many opportunities, especially in the beginning of your business, to make money. Businesses are very fragile. They're fledgling little babies. And you have to make money every possible way that you can, every possible way. You know, my kids will go online and they'll play card games. And as I teach them how to play these games, you know, I teach them to be very precise in how they play, because if they miss a move, they probably are going to lose the game. And I teach them that every move matters. Every dollar matters, especially early on in your business. And if you don't strategically plan it on purpose, you're probably going to leave money on the table. And businesses have a very hard time surviving if they don't pick up all the opportunities that are available to them. And as budding entrepreneurs or people who really want to make it happen, my whole life's about advocating for entrepreneurs. I want you to succeed, and the way you're going to do it is by optimizing your revenue streams, and that's going to happen because you build a revenue octopus and you get it done precisely and accurately.
Well, Jennifer, what else do you want to know from Joel today?
Well, Tina, Joel has given us a lot of examples here of some of the things we need to do to be creative. And obviously, Joel, everybody listening does not want to be in box one. We are working steadily up, and we want to, probably most of us are in box three or box four, but we want to make sure that we stay there. And you've devoted your career to helping people get there, stay there, and grow their box three and four. And you do a lot of that through some of your courses and whatnot. Tell us a little bit more about how it is that you'll take somebody, especially somebody who's newer in business, because that's a lot of our listeners here today. They're newer in business. How do you work with somebody who's a starting entrepreneur, or their business isn't that big at this point, and help elevate them to the point where they're in a strong, solid box three and four, and they know it's just going to grow from there?
Well, you know, the first part of working with anybody is getting people to understand where they are and what's possible. So to me, just explaining the concept of a revenue octopus, people go, I get that. I could totally draw one of those. I could make one. I could figure this out, and I could make that happen. And now I've got a very clear picture of what I want my business to be. So the first part is always education. You have to learn this. And once you learn it, then you can start to put your finger on, okay, now, I've got all these revenue streams. This particular revenue stream is a box one revenue stream. this one's a box two, this one's a box three, I don't have any box four. And just so you understand, many businesses start in box one. You don't have to. I mean, some start in box two. You guys are working with people who are trying to be in box three. But box three businesses take the longest to develop. It takes, think about a subscription product or a database. It takes a long time to build it, but once you have it for a long time. You know, box one, if you throw out a shingle, if you're a CPA or an attorney or whatever, you can probably get some clients really fast. And you could probably make a living really fast. It's not a great living, and if you stop doing it or you move to another town, you go back to zero. But part of the trick is you have to balance your box one, your box two, and your box three together so you can make it work. And ultimately, when you make a lot of money, then you spend your time in box four, and that's really where the great excitement is. But long and the short is that you really have to first educate audiences or clients about what's possible for them and help them to understand it. Now, most early stage companies have a really hard time affording the fees that I charge, and I'm not going to discuss what that is because it's a lot, and for some situations it's relevant. But what I've done is put together materials that makes it possible for people to get the same advisory that I would give an upstart, you know, a big, you know, startup company that has lots and lots of money. I've made those same materials available so that they go through this because I want them to get to a certain place so that eventually if they get to a difficult situation, now I've got the money, they can call Joel and they can ask the question, and that works out. But they have to start somewhere, and the somewhere is usually by getting some basic materials that – when I say basic, I don't mean like just very basic. I mean something where you're going to learn it, but it's going to show you exactly what to do so you can precisely draw a revenue octopus that will take you through your business. Now, one of the things that we didn't discuss is that there's different kinds of revenue octopus opportunities. There's different ways of drawing them, and there's lots of different possibilities. And people really have to they have to learn how that works. They have to learn, based on the kind of business I'm in, what exactly do I want to accomplish. One of the things is called an instant octopus, where on the first day of your business, you've got eight revenue streams going. That doesn't happen all the time, but there's some businesses where that's relevant. Some of them are gradual. And if a gradual octopus, you're going to add revenue streams slowly over time. You know, I can imagine the Starbucks was more slowly over time, but other ones are instantaneous. And I've been involved in companies where they're both. So I want people to really get a good, solid foundation about how their business should be organized and planned, because otherwise they're going to waste money on courses and on activities and seminars. Get smart. Think about what you want to do with your business in advance. And, you know, this is the one place I don't want you to shortchange yourself, because if you shortchange yourself here, you're going to be paying for it for a long, long time into the future. And that's probably the first most important thing that I would do in working with people about, you know, how they're going to really put their business on track.
And if they want to get access to this, Joel, where do they go?
Oh, well, you know, if people really are ready and they believe that they're not one of these talkers, they're not one of these happy dreamers, that they're really somebody who's very serious about taking their business to the next level, they can go to a special website that we've set up called RevenueOctopus.com. Couldn't be any easier than that. And two things are going to happen. Number one is you're going to be put on our you can join our blog list. We're going to give you a couple of things for coming to that website. Number one is I have a resource guide that I put together, and it's all my favorite entrepreneurial resources. Entrepreneurs have to work like 20 people in a corporate environment. And so this is a way, these are some of the tools that I use to help me and the people who are on my team to be extremely effective. That's the first thing. The second thing is I want to pick a couple entrepreneurs, and I want to help them build an octopus. So I want to, if people go to this website, I'm going to put some of the names of these people into a contest. I'm going to draw a couple, and I'm going to do a couple of strategic calls with people to help make that happen. But the last thing is the Revenue Octopus material is part of a larger series that we've put together of all the strategic material that you need. But the Revenue Octopus material itself is so critical, and I want you to have it so badly, that I've made it available. So if you go into the Revenue Octopus page, you give us your name and information, you'll be entered into the contest for a, you know, for an Octopus strategy session with me. You'll also get the Entrepreneur's Resource Guide. And then on the page that follows that, you can purchase 6 modules that will walk you through every single step of building an octopus. It'll teach you whether it's instant or gradual. It'll teach you what kinds of revenue streams are relevant for your business. It'll give you clear examples. If you're in an information product business, there's a whole section just for you on information product revenue octopus opportunities and what are the likely things that you're going to do. You know, where's the money for you? So if you don't have the skills to sit down and brainstorm all this by yourself, I've already given it to you. You're going to get it absolutely done, complete, copycat it, and you're back in business in 20 minutes. Read it, you're back in business, and now you're going with a clear plan. The plan is right there in that material. You're also going to learn about box 1, 2, 3, and 4, and it'll help you analyze what kind of box revenue you have, because you want to have lots of different kinds of revenue coming in your business. So all of this material is available on that website, and if you go there, I think, Gina, we actually, there's a special price attached to it. The whole thing, if you can believe this, you know, what I would charge tens of thousands of dollars to do, if it was personally done, has been distilled by Professor Mark and me into 6 little booklets, PDF booklets, that we can that we'll email to you immediately, are available for a single payment of $497. There's a 2-payment plan that's just a little bit more. If somebody'd like to make a second payment a month from now, they can break it into 2 pieces. But for $497, imagine that, being able to create a revenue octopus that will give you great clarity for the life of your business. It will help you to stop wasting money on all the things that you don't need, and it will tell you exactly where you need to engage expert professional assistance from other people, because you know, you'll know exactly what the revenue streams are that you're focused on. This is powerful stuff, and you know, Gina, I know you've seen it. Any comment on it?
I think it's absolutely fantastic. I think every one of my students really needs it too. So something that I can't recommend highly enough. I know when I'm teaching, I always talk about starting with your strategic plan. In my apprenticeship program, before we even look at things like blogging and traffic and list building and whatnot, we build our strategic plan. This is the key component to that outcome of the strategic plan. You've got to have this piece to plan it in a way that's really going to turn into money over and over again. And this whole concept of boxes and the different types of income that comes into each one of them is something that a lot of people really, they've not been exposed to. So it's hard for them to grasp it just because they haven't been exposed to it. The way that you break it down into such simple, easy to understand, and so easy to implement strategies is just fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Gina, I really hope that your listeners take advantage of this. This is a special arrangement, you know, between us, and I really want people to succeed with this. If entrepreneurs really want to make it happen, they have to take some action. They got to take action right now. They're going to have to invest in themselves. They're going to have to spend some time, a little bit of resources, and they're going to have to be smart. You know, I would imagine that most of the people who are, you know, listening, Gina, are not 20 years old. A lot of
right.
them
most are not.
40s or 50s or 60s. They don't have a lot of time to waste. I don't have time to waste. These people need to come out of the gate like a rocket. And the way they're going to come out of the gate is by having their strategic plan done, organized, and ready. They don't have 20 years like I did, you know, fooling around, testing, trying, implementing, practicing. Why don't you just learn what I already know and just do it? I mean, this material is going to change the way you think about your business. It's life-changing information. And, you know, I mean, I guess you could do it without
a lot of people. And I know you're too modest to say it, Joel, but let me tell everyone, if you were to go and work with Joel one-on-one to have him help you do this for your business, don't plan on it taking $1,000 or $2,000 to do that. It's going to cost you thousands and thousands of dollars. This is the one opportunity to really work with Joel's brain for well under $1,000. I mean, for $497, it is. Don't look at it as you're spending $497, because that's not what you're doing when you pick up the Revenue Octopus. You are making an investment that will reap a return over and over and over again. I think with the materials that are there, it's extremely realistic to put at least two or three zeros after what that cost is to you, so that it really is an investment that will reap a return.
People make 100 to 1 on my stuff all the time.
I wouldn't doubt it.
All the time. I mean, even my advisory services, my goal is always for people to make 100 to 1.
Yeah.
Even if they engage me for large numbers, they get much larger numbers back. And that I'm a professional advisor to companies. I have clients all over the country and around the world. I have a very special expertise that companies call on me for. And, you know, largely it has to do with raising money. And here, let me just add one thing. If you ever plan on getting money, you know, would an investor rather get involved in a one revenue stream business or a multiple revenue stream business? Well, so ask yourself, would you rather own a one revenue stream business or a multiple revenue stream business? Well, you know what? Insurance companies know that there's safety in numbers, and that's what you have to bet on, is safety in numbers. You have to prepare yourself, protect yourself, plan for yourself. And if you don't build a revenue octopus, you're going to find yourself in a compromised position that could be readily taken over or injured by a competitor. And it's not going to work out for you. And I'm not telling you, open a website over here on one thing and go sell flowers over there on the other. I'm talking about take whatever your core business is, get lots of different ways of making money from it, so that if one of your ideas doesn't work and a second doesn't work, the third one's going to be a charm. And that's the way that this works, is you must organize yourself in a way that protects the downside and gives you unlimited upside. And if you just look at the Revenue Octopus materials that I've built, especially considering if you're not a creative person, I've already given you one.
Well, it's leverage through diversification, right?
Well, it's leverage through diversification, and it's just pure common sense and smart to have lots of revenue streams driving your business.
So, Jennifer, why don't we talk about your business and have Joel give you a little bit of help while we're on this call?
Oh, perfect.
I would absolutely love that. Joel, I'm so glad that you're with us today, because you have been, man, you've been written up in Entrepreneur Magazine and, you know, the LA Times. You've been written about in the Wall Street Journal, and the reason is you're one of the best. You're one of the best, and I have to tell you, this is one of the lessons that I keep learning, and you are here to reinforce that today. Just a quick story before we go into my business. I have this house in Arizona. I live in California, and we've been trying to sell and rent that darn thing for 2 years, been doing it with mild amount of success, working with various agents, just kind of, hey, who would like to take this on, whatever realtor thinks they might be able to do this. And most of them, Joel and Gina, have been saying, it's a tough market, you know, nobody's renting, you're going to have to cut down the price, you can't sell it, you might as well, and giving us the doom and gloom. And what we forgot to do until recently was ask ourselves the question, who is the best? And when we remembered there was a best agent that helped us solve our problem a number of years ago, we looked up her name. Her name is Leslie St. Moe, and it turns out she's not only one of the best agents, she's now gone and bought Century 21 for all of Southeast Arizona. Why? Because she's the best. And when we gave the best a call, within a day, she solved all our problems. In 2 years, I can't tell you how many different agents, rental agents, et cetera, had been saying, well, we'll try to help you, and giving us minimal results. We called this woman up. Within one day, she solved all our problems way beyond what we ever thought was possible with this house, which was a problem, and now it's turning into a blessing again for us, which was our original intention. And I say all that.
Well, I'll bet that woman didn't take a discount on her commission either.
No, right. But are we glad to give her? Yeah, you're absolutely right. She commands a higher commission. Are we absolutely pleased to give it to her? Absolutely, absolutely, because it's already come back beyond that. And the point of that is, you know, people will draw their own conclusions and take their own actions on this, but either you kind of work with whoever, you know, the lowest hanging fruit, so to speak, of advisors and whatnot who might help you a little bit, or you say, where do you really want your business to go? And if you want it to really go high, if you want it to, as you said, come out of the gate like a rocket, you've got to work with the best. And I appreciate and, you know, we're honored to have you on the show because you're one of the best. And so having the opportunity to make our businesses grow is amazing, is absolutely amazing.
You know, every business is growable. Let me talk about this economy for a second. A lot of people think, oh, my God, this is such a bad economy. Well, our mantra, our company's mantra, and we have a dozen people that work in our company that are on our team. And, in fact, we're always looking for more people, so we're interested in the skills that, you know, Gina's people brings. You know, and Jennifer, I'm speaking about Gina because I don't know you like I know Gina.
Sure.
But, you know, we're always looking for great additions to our team. And the mantra of our team this year is be superlative, be the best. Because, you know, let's say real estate or insurance, mortgage brokers. You know, 80% of the mortgage brokers are gone. They got wiped out. But who's left? The best. The people that survived are the best. They're the fastest, the strongest, the smartest, the hungriest. They're the ones that try the hardest. Those are the people that I want to be around. I want people around me on my team that are fantastic, that are going to go the extra mile, and they're going to do things that are going to make it happen. And let me tell you something. You know how I'm going to know that somebody's going to go the extra mile? They're going to buy this $497 thing, and they're going to implement it, and they're going to call me, and they're going to say, Joel, I did this. Can you help me? And guess what? The squeaky wheel always gets the oil. You want to get help from somebody? Go do what their recommendation is. Come back and show them, I list to you word for word. Now I need a little bit more help. You know, don't call somebody on the phone and say, Joel, can you help me for free and do this? You know what? I just told you what to do. Go and do it. Build a revenue octopus. Identify your revenue streams. Lock down all your different issues. And you know what? And then if somebody called me in 6 months and they said, I did exactly what you said, can I talk to you about a few things? You know what? I donate a lot of time to entrepreneurs, and that's why. It's because they're people that do what I tell them. And that's what I want your audience to do, guys, is I want them to build a revenue octopus because there's nothing more significant that they could do to protect their family, their wealth, opportunity. And these are people who are at an age that don't have the opportunity to waste a lot of time. There's no time to waste. Let's get moving right this minute. I want to see people doing it, and that's how I operate. I operate from a position of, you know, action. People who take action get my attention. And interestingly enough, I'm kind of a sucker for enthusiasm. Our general manager, whose name is Matt, he's our general manager because several years ago he called me and said, "I just love what you're doing. I'd like to be involved with this," and I said, "Okay." And you know what? It was the best decision I ever made because Matt's been awesome. And that's where we've gotten all of our people. They come from our blog. They come from our followers, our fans. And, you know, we pick people who are doing what we tell them to do. And if they're out there doing what we tell them to do, then they're doing it. So just to remind you, revenueoctopus.com. Go to that website right now. Opt in. Get the two gifts that we offer to you, which number one is the Entrepreneur Successful Resource Guide. And second, we're going to enter you into a contest because I'm going to pick a couple people and strategically assist them in building a revenue octopus for their business. And if you'd like to have those two things, that's terrific. Go do that no matter what. But then I want you to go to that next page and buy the materials to help you learn how to build a revenue octopus. Because if you do that, I can assure you that your situation will advance rapidly. You won't be bumbling along. You'll really make a big difference in the way that you operate and the way that you run your business. You know, or maybe you're just fooling around wasting time, and that's okay too. Just be honest with yourself about where you are. Do you want to be a player? Do you really want to make a living, you know, to make your family safe and secure? Or are you just, you know, kind of wasting time being a hobbyist? And neither one is a problem. They're both okay. Just be honest about what, you know, what you're out there doing. And you know what, guys, that's pretty much, you know, where I'm at. And I don't fool around that much. You know, I really try to, you know, shoot straight and tell people how it is. And some people like it a little more than others, but that's how it is.
Well, and
that's one thing I can definitely say about you, Joel. You are a straight shooter, and you tell it like it is. You don't sugarcoat it. You don't pussyfoot around. You tell it like it is every time.
Every single time, you know. Listen, you know, I'm the same age. You know, none of us have time to fool around. And, you know, that's the thing, is that I don't like to fool around. I don't tell people things that, you know, send them off in a weird direction. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. You know, I'm involved in, we're selling a seminar right now on real estate syndication, and which is going to be held in Florida for people who raise money and buy real estate with it. It's a kind of an intermediate to advanced real estate program. And, you know, when a salesperson gets on the phone, one of the guys that works for us or whatever, a lot of people, they're like, well, I don't really know if I want to go. I'm not really sure, you know. Just yes or no. It's very simple. You know, do you want to be in this business or not? And you know, we have to push people to their edge, because left to their own devices, they don't do anything. And my whole thing is, I want entrepreneurs to succeed. If I see that somebody is really not likely to be a successful person because they don't really want to or whatever, I won't push them. But if somebody has the gleam in their eye, I will push them and help them make it happen. And that's what I want to do with you. Go opt in at revenueoctopus.com. Buy the little course. It's very simple. It's going to get you through all this. It's going to give you the Revenue Octopus. You can read the stuff. Some of it's even kind of humorous. You're going to enjoy the material. It's six books, six little booklets. Each one's 30 or 40 pages long. They have worksheets and manuals. You're getting a lot of material for the money. And you are going to come out with a ironclad Revenue Octopus that's going to help you advance your business tremendously. And short of that,
Jennifer, you've got 9 minutes, Jennifer, to have Joel help you with your Revenue Octopus.
Oh, score. Well, score. Well, Joel, I thank you for that. And, Joel, I am already opted in myself, and you'll see more from Jennifer at EmpoweringWomenInBusiness.com, because I know that I can learn a lot from you as well. In terms of what I'm doing, I have a website called EmpoweringWomenInBusiness.com, and it stretches out. It has a few different revenue octopuses, and I bet you can help me find some more tentacles there. What I do with this is help women with the tools, inspiration, and education so that they can not only raise their income by 50% or more, but more importantly, that they can also discover and become the person they're meant to become. And by that, I am helping women to listen to their hearts, to play bigger, love bigger, dream bigger, and then act bigger as they find their powerful beyond measure. So that's the goal behind what I do with Empowering Women in Business. I do it through the website. I have a radio show. I create joint ventures with other people. I look for other people who are experts in various aspects of business or personal growth and development. And bring them to my listening or reading audience.
So, what's the business? Okay, what are you selling?
I am selling education. Absolutely, it's an education business, primarily focused on business as well as.
You sell the education?
No, I give the education, and I give the education for starters, and then of course I sell my products as well as other people's products that can further enhance or quicker enhance their progress in, you know, for various aspects of business, let it be whether it's marketing, whether it's a specific kind of advertising, how to sell better, that kind of thing.
So your core business is educational or information products, right?
Exactly.
That's your core business, okay? Now, you ask yourself the question, you know, let's say on the one side of the octopus, you're going to say, how can we go deeper with these customers? So who are these customers? They're women?
Yep, they're women, primarily between the ages of 30 and 55, obviously entrepreneurially minded, many of whom work from home or are attempting to be. Solopreneurs mostly.
All right, so solopreneur. All right, good. So what are other things that these people need that you could sell to them? Beside the information products that you're selling on the topic of you know, of education.
Okay, well, in addition to the info products, then the tools that help them do that. So these might be the software that helps them find the information they need, or the list sometimes, putting them in contact with other JV brokers or list brokers of people who really have their target audience. It might be, of course, we'll have seminars, but since it's not quite the question you're asking there.
No, that's excellent. Seminars is great, okay?
Okay.
So tools, in my mind, tools is one thing, whether it's software or lists. Tools is kind of in one bucket.
Okay.
Okay? Seminars is kind of in another bucket, which is excellent. What are other things that you could do with these people that would, you know, and remember, I'm not the one necessarily that answers all the questions. There's no magic to this. My job is to draw it out of you. So what are some other things that you could do with these women that would help you go deep in your relationship with them?
Well, you know, going along the example that you brought up with Starbucks or that life insurance man who went to the grocery stores and the automakers, I can marry the companies and whatever that provide the products and services these women, so they're mostly women, they're moms, they're, you know, that they already use that might not be related.
That's on the other side. That's on the get more customers side. This is how can you go deep with the women that you have? How can you sell the existing people more stuff? Here you have women 30 to 55, entrepreneurial, home-based businesses, solopreneurs. What do those people need? Because they're your. What do those people need that are related to your business?
They need the plan. It starts with strategies, as you said here. It starts with the basic strategy and understanding of where they're at, where they want to go.
So let me generalize that. They need advisory services.
Yes.
Okay, so advisory maybe in coaching, okay?
Yep.
So that's another one for you. Now, advisory and coaching is box one, but it's not bad to have box one. You know, you don't want to ultimately be in box one, but, you know, it's not bad to have some box one activity, you know, as part of your business because it's quick money.
Absolutely.
What else do these people need?
Okay, so once they have the strategies, then they need a way to, to further develop each arm of those strategies, which, of course, includes the long-term planning. You know, you teach companies how to think for the future, where they want to be not only 1 year from now, but 5 years from now. Do they want to sell? Do they want to pass the business on to their children? Where is it that they want to go? And depending
3 minutes, guys.
All right, depending on where they want to go, then I have to take those strategies steps further. And the answer to that...
But you're still inside of advisory services, which is exactly the same. What other things? Advisory now, personal one-to-one coaching, advisory, box one, that's handled. What other things do these women need? It would be a fourth revenue stream.
They need structure. So I have a company that knows how to structure them, and you know whether they need to have a C corp or an L corp or an LLC or whatever it is. They need structure. They need tax services, tax and CPA services, which is kind of there's a few different subscription services that you talked about that you know they buy it once and they continue to use it, and I would get a bit of a revenue stream.
That's a good point. They do need legal, tax, and accounting. You probably can't make any money from, you know, referring those services because professionals can't really pay fees, but they do need that. So now flip over to the other side because the truth is, you know, you might just trade. Hey, look, I'll tell you what, I'll tell my people to go to you for tax and accounting.
I don't want to cut you off, Joel, but there's only about 45 seconds left, and I want to get that URL in there one more time.
All right,
guys.
Let me just say for Jennifer, you know, she'll have to wait for next time to finish the other side of the octopus. But if you understand how critical this is, go to revenueoctopus.com, register, get the two free gifts, the resource guide, and also the enter the contest for me to do a Revenue Octopus with you like I'm doing with Jen right now, and then flip to the next page, and for $497, buy the 6 modules that are going to help you to learn how to create this, including getting the example of the one that exactly is going to precisely fit your information business. I want to see you. I hope to have you with us. And Gina, thank you for allowing me here. And Jennifer, thank you for sharing your business.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Joel. For everyone, next week, 12 o'clock noon Eastern on Tuesday here on Relationship Marketing 101, my guest will be David Preston, the legendary consultant, who will be sharing strategies for offline businesses and bringing them to the Internet.
Thank you again, Joel. This has been an incredible show today. I really appreciate it. And
okay,
take care, everybody.
For having me.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Jennifer.